Started. Okay, so really two topics this evening, both of which we've really already addressed. These are the two final criteria for making Bo'er Mutter. We've spoken about this before. We've spoken about how there are three different items that are all required in order to make sorting on Shabbos an act that becomes permissible rather than one that's prohibited. The three are Miyad, Biyad, Ochel Mitoch Psolas. For going in reverse order, Ochel Mitoch Psolas is one that we've already addressed the past couple of shiurim, primarily, which is that you need to remove the good from the bad as opposed to the bad from the good. Number one, so that we've already spoken about. Number two, and this is going to be the subject of tonight's shiur. Then we'll probably move on to another topic, another malacha, another dimension of Shabbos next time, a couple of weeks, Mirat Hashem. But these final two are Miyad and Biyad. The idea of needing to remove that item for immediate use, meaning again, even if I'm removing the ochel from the psolas, the good from the bad, it still needs to be for immediate use, and then also it needs to be removed by hand. What do we mean when we speak about each one of those criteria? What do we mean when we talk about removing something for immediate use? How immediate is immediate use, number one? And then number two, we'll get into what we mean when we talk about removing something by hand. What exactly does that refer to? Okay, so a number of different items to talk about. You have something of an outline. Feel free to take notes or at least just use it to follow along a little bit. But we'll get a lot done here. First of all, how long? How long are we talking about when we speak about miyad? When we say, by the way, just one other point of, we noted this in, I think, the first shiur, but it's worth reiterating now. Why is it these three items? Why do these three items turn the act of Bo'er from being something prohibited into being something permitted? Why does it make it okay because you've now done it in this manner, that you've removed good from bad, that you're doing it for immediate use, and that you're doing it by hand? The difference is that now you have effectively created, or you have performed an act that we would define as being an act of achila. Doesn't even need to be that you're actually eating anything right now, but we know with certainty that eating on Shabbos is absolutely permissible. So if eating on Shabbos is permissible, then similarly, anything that fits within the basic parameters of an act of eating is also going to not be construed as Bo'er, as actual sorting or separating. Instead, it'll just be akin to an act that we know for sure is permitted. It's going to be considered derech achila. It's the manner in which we eat. Again, even if you're not actually eating anything, even if you're separating laundry or you're separating game pieces, but if it's done in a manner that basically matches up, that parallels an act of eating, derech achila, then we know that to be permissible. That's why all these things become important. That's why it needs to be for immediate use. Because when a person sits down to eat, they're doing so for immediate consumption. They're doing so to be able to eat immediately. If we know that cutting food up on your plate and pulling a bit of salad out of the rest of the pile that's still sitting on your plate, we know that that must be permissible. Can't be that the Torah is telling me not to eat on Shabbos. Can't be that that's actually a real bona fide malacha. So that, again, is something that's being done for immediate use or immediate consumption, and is also going to be something that we do by hand. It's not going to involve any really complicated kinds of either machinery, appliances, kitchen tools, gadgets, gizmos, and the like. So when we speak about doing so miyad, again, so how long is that exactly? Number of opinions, but overwhelmingly it's vague. It's really, really vague. So a couple of things to take note of. Number one is that the Mishnah Berurah, actually not in speaking about Bo'er, but really speaking about Tochen, which is another malacha that might require, in certain circumstances, might require us doing so immediately in advance of the Seuda, not well in advance, but immediately before we actually eat. So there the Mishnah Berurah says that you got to wait until Shul lets out. Got to wait until Shul lets out. How much time is that? I don't know exactly. But the point being that one should not prepare a seuda, let's say, in the morning, or prepare things, separate things, even in a permissible fashion. Separating some vegetables out of the veggie drawer. Ochel mitoch psoles. But doing so for a seuda that we're not going to eat for another, I don't know, for another hour, right? Before I, or 2 hours, 3 hours, whatever it is. Before I go to shul, in advance of going to shul, that I'm already separating now for a seuda that I'm going to have much later on that afternoon, that certainly is not okay. What then is okay? By the way, so even, it sounds like, by the way, according to the Mishnah Berurah, that even if I could do it at an earlier stage, I know, let's say we were more of a yekish kind of shul, and we knew that like clockwork, we let out absolutely without fail every week at 11 o'clock. So I know, let's say, that everybody's going to be, that Shul's going to let out in 20 minutes. Okay, so that's pretty good. So I'm at home at 10:40, so let me start doing things then. It sounds like that timing should be a little bit closer to the actual Sa'uda. Waiting until you know that people are really leaving Shul, they're on their way home. Once they're on their way home, readying themselves basically to eat as soon as they get home, that would be considered appropriate. Again, it's a very vague, ambiguous kind of time frame, but that's at least one possible bookend. There are some others. In a tshuva that was written from Rav Moshe Feinstein to Rav Shimon Eider, I think I've mentioned this before, that in the back of Rav Shimon Eider's Sefer on Hilchos Shabbos, he has a collection of tshuvos, or not, it's really one long tshuva, but different questions that Rav Eider had asked his Rebbe, Rav Moshe, about Borer in particular. I think it might be the final, or maybe the next to last, deals with this issue. How much time do we consider to be miyad? How close to the Sa'uda do you need to prepare? How close to the time that I'm going to start eating do I need to perform this borer in order to make that borer mutter? So specifically what Rav Eider was asking about was, you know, you see the term sha'a thrown around a lot in the halachic literature. There's a lot of talk about an hour. So what does that mean? Does that mean like literally 60 minutes? Is that something that I can rely upon? That as long as I'm within 60 minutes of mealtime, then basically it would be appropriate to sort in a permissible fashion. So Rav Moshe says no. No, that when we speak about a shah, it's not specifically 60 minutes, and it's not like sha'os zmanios, it's not like halachic hours or anything like that. Final word Rav Moshe says, however much time it takes to prepare the Sa'uda. However much time it takes to prepare, whatever that is. And depending on the complexity maybe of the foods that are being prepared, and depending on how quickly you ordinarily or typically work, but meaning I shouldn't be preparing very far in advance with the knowledge, let's say, that I'll still have like a lot of downtime thereafter to be able to lounge and rest and relax after the preparation. Those items that are borer related need to be as close as possible to the Sa'uda, again, however long it takes to really properly, appropriately prepare the meal. Again, sort of vague, but it's at least getting a little bit closer to some sort of working definition. We'll speak about one other opinion that's probably probably the most concrete, maybe also the most strict. We'll deal with that in a little bit. We'll come back to maybe one other opinion here. Meanwhile, another important item to keep in mind is that it's not strictly just a matter of time, right? Think about what it means when we speak about samuch l'sa'uda, that it's close. Right, that it's close to the time when the Sa'uda is going to be eaten, juxtaposed, adjacent to the Sa'uda. So forgetting about time for a minute, what about activity? What about activity? So Rav Eliashiv wrote a psak regarding separating now, even though it might be close to mealtime, but knowing full well and even having the intent, having the plan that I'm going to do some other act that's of fair significance even after I do the separating. So I'll paint the picture. Let's say I live right next to Shul. Let's say I live right next to Shul. And I know that I probably have, again, it works like clockwork. Shul's going to be over at 11 o'clock. My company, nobody's going to be lingering in Shul very long. They'll be home. We'll be ready to eat at 11:15. And right now it's 10:55. Right, so I'm within a pretty narrow time frame before the actual Sa'uda. I'm going to separate the veggies out now, right, that I'm going to need for my salad. And then I'll still have plenty of time, like another 10 minutes, I'll walk to Shul. I'll walk to Shul, and I'll be a Kiddush, and I'll hang out for a while, and then we'll come back home. And this is all like in a very narrow sort of time frame, all within the span of 20 minutes. Well, the Asher says nothing doing. That if the intent is, from the outset, if the intent is that I'm going to perform some other very significant act after I've done the separating, it doesn't matter how close to the Sa'uda is, it is time-wise, that still nevertheless is rendered a significant enough break in between. So it's something to be mindful of. Sefer here, Orchos Shabbos, speaks about the nature of what those acts are is not very clearly outlined. So Orchos Shabbos gives two examples that he considers to be pretty clear. Dressing a child, getting a kid dressed, not considered to be a significant act. not considered to be a significant act. Everyone, sigh of relief. Sigh of relief. Not considered to. Oh, yeah, dressing a child, right? Because you're picking out which. You're selecting which child is easiest to get dressed from the lineup. Meaning, let's say, okay, so I have a vegetable bin and things are just are a mess and it's a taroves and there are lots of different veggies inside. So selecting which veggies I want is an appropriate act of borer. You're taking ochel from psoles, taking ones I want, leaving behind what I don't want. I'm doing so biad, literally taking it with my hands. Question is it samach l'sa'uda? So it's samach l'sa'uda if, listen, we're probably going to be eating in the next, 20 minutes. So if people are already coming home from shul and shul's let out already, are going to be eating in the next 20 minutes or so. I'll just grab the veggies, start prepping the salad, get the baby dressed, and then kind of go back to whatever I was doing. That's more than okay. Again, it's not just an issue of time. In the scenario in which I live right next to shul, let me just pop in and I'll go say my hellos at Kiddush and I'll just walk down the block. That's a pretty significant act. The idea of going out on a tiul or a spazier or a stroll or whatever should really be done before you start doing anything that would be considered borer. By the way, where does this go?
We'll get that practical example. Other than taking your vegetables from the
drawer. Taking the vegetables from a drawer. We'll get to this in a little bit, but let's say...
I listened to the first. I didn't hear the second. So
this is an audit where we want to know exactly what you've listened to.
Set the table.
Peeling. Setting the table. Pulling silverware out from a collection. We'll get into a whole bunch of ones. But separating vegetables, peeling vegetables, dividing. Let's say if you have like multiple types of food in one tray and kind of deciding what you do want from it and what you don't want from it, even if you're pulling out the ochel. We spoke about OCD jelly bean sorting, right? All those kinds of things. So what about, so now here's a good one. What about a large sa'uda? What if you have a large sa'uda? So the nature of saying that something is samach l'sa'uda, especially let's work with Rav Moshe's definition for a moment, that it depends on how long it takes for you to prepare. So now how much latitude do I have? Or how much ability do I have to consider the size, the sheer size of the sa'uda that I'm preparing for and making a determination about how long it takes to prepare? If I'm eating by myself, so making a salad might take 5 minutes. If I'm preparing for 30 guests, it might take 40 minutes. I don't know, however long it takes. So does the magnitude of the sa'uda, magnitude, number of participants, sheer number of participants and invited guests and the like, does that change the amount of prep time with respect to this halacha? The question was posed to the Chazon Ish about like a public kind of cafeteria dining room, like a camp, like a yeshiva, like a hotel. So it could take hours. It could take hours of prep work, right? However long it's going to take out. Now, usually, I actually mentioned this to my students this morning, that usually when you start to talk about a much larger number of people, you're not talking about pulling out individual tomatoes from a drawer, right? When you walk into the fridge, like in camp, there were, entire pallets of, cucumbers, entire crates of tomatoes. It's not like you're picking out a few, like, cherry tomatoes from the, anything like that. So, nevertheless, so let's say you have that sort of situation. Let's say I need to sort out whatever vegetables I am taking from a whole collection, and just the sheer chopping, you're chopping for hundreds of people. So it's going to take, 45 minutes, an hour, whatever it is. Is that acceptable? Chazon Ish said, absolutely not. Absolutely not. It doesn't matter how many participants there are. Why? So follow this. If you're preparing for one person, it should take however long it takes to prepare a sa'uda for a person, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, a half hour. Chazon Ish says it should take no more than a half hour. That was the concrete time frame that I was talking about before. It should take a half hour. It takes a half hour to prepare a sa'uda, an average, normal, typical sa'uda, let's say for one person or a few people. So why am I doing that half hour's worth of preparation for, let's say, my three guests here? Why am I doing that 3 hours in advance? Well, because they're not the only ones. I have those three guests times 10 or times 100. I'm not just preparing for them. I'm preparing for hundreds and hundreds of people. What's that got to do with them? for them, my prep that I'm performing for them, samach l'sa'uda for them, is a half hour. The reason why I'm doing it so far in advance is because I'm doing it for so many people so many times over, but that's not really considered samach l'sa'uda. It's, by the way, it becomes much more compelling if you keep in mind, not that the Chazon Ish needs my explanation, but to filter this through the prism that we mentioned before. Why is samach l'sa'uda important? Because if it's samach l'sa'uda, it's more akin to a typical act of eating. It's derech achila. Is it fair to say that we know that it's not borer if it's a regular act of eating? You're not really doing anything more significant. Once you start multiplying this out 100-fold or 300-fold or 600-fold or 1,000-fold, it becomes much more significant. And just inherently, it becomes further removed from that act of eating, a typical act of eating that we know absolutely to be mutter, that we're trying to compare all other types of mutter borer to. So anyway, that's the Chazon Ish. The Mishneh Berurah clearly says otherwise. Mishneh Berurah, the actual context here is a little bit complicated. But at any rate, when there's a scenario in which you're talking about cracking nuts or shelling nuts, and it needs to be samach l'sa'uda, and it seems that the Shulchan Aruch is giving many, many hours to be able to get that task done, Mishneh Berurah notes, really in the Shahar HaTzion, notes that the reason why is because he's talking about a scenario where you have many, many guests to prepare for. Apparently, in the thinking of the Mishneh Berurah, if you have many, many guests to prepare for, that does swell or expand the amount of time that you have to be able to prepare. Like we'll always say, it's always ideal to try to be strict wherever possible. But Mishneh Berurah certainly can be relied upon. So if you have many, many guests and you find that you need more prep time than you ordinarily would, or if you decide to take a job working in a camp kitchen, speak to me before you do that. But if you decide to do that, then know that you have some wiggle room. By the way, so what would the Chazon Ish say about that? Oh, so what are you supposed to do in camp? Prepare before Shabbos. Prepare before Shabbos. Whatever you need to separate. By the way, it's true for Tochen also. We'll get there at some point. Whatever you need to separate, whatever you need to chop into very small pieces. So sorry, if it needs to be samach l'sa'uda, you're not going to have the ability to do so if you have 1,000 guests. So make sure that it's done before Shabbos. Okay. One other important item. What about in terms of sheer quantity, right? You get into the following issue. I assume that your homes are much like ours in that there are more than just dishes to clear after a meal. There's still a lot of food. Still a lot of food to clean up after a meal. It doesn't matter how many, how few or how many. There's always extras. There are always leftovers. Why? Because that's how we roll. Baruch Hashem. We're very, very fortunate. We live in an incredibly bountiful generation. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu has been very, very good to us in this generation. There's Knei Nahara, there's food. So what about separating that food? You have 10 guests, and can you prepare 12 portions? Can you prepare 15 portions? Can you prepare 20 portions? Whatever is like, I don't ordinarily think about. However, whatever I need to separate for, how strict, how narrow do I need to be in terms of my thinking and my preparing when it comes to really considering, listen, if we have this number, is family style even okay? Right? Do I need to plate everybody's individual portions so that I know that I'm not going over on any of the borer that I do? If I'm performing borer now, and the reason why my borer now is mutter, is because it's samach l'sa'uda, it's right adjacent to when people are actually going to be eating. If nobody ends up eating that food at all, then how could you claim that that was samach l'sa'uda? This wasn't even part of the suda. There's still tomatoes sitting in the bowl. There's still a lot of salad sitting at the bottom. There's still a lot of chicken on that platter. What gave me the right to prepare it even just 20 minutes ago if l'maisa, nobody ends up eating it, and it's all going to get put back in the fridge? So the Mishneh Berurah does talk about it. He wonders what happens when you have leftovers, and he says, no, if you have leftovers, the fact is, at the time, it was all done beheder. Right? When you did it, it was permissible. When you did it, it was okay. So the question is, well, what exact... Okay, it was done when it was permissible, but still, maybe what he's talking about is where you have, you know, some extra leftovers on the plate. Maybe I did prepare an individual portion for every single guest around the table, and then there are leftovers, and now I want to know what to do. Right? He didn't finish every single bite on the plate. So, Aruch HaShem, it this seems to be what the Mishnah Berurah is talking about. But Archa Shabbos just says explicitly that you can prepare ba'ayin yafeh. You can prepare in generosity mode. You can prepare the way that we usually prepare, as long as there is no express kavana. Let me put a lot on the plate now, and then there will be left over, and we can also have it for Shal Shudas. If that's part of the actual calculation, part of the actual thinking, that's really problematic. Because that's not really Samach L'Su'udah. I'm not really doing all of that for this Su'udah. I'm doing it so that I know that there will be left over in the afternoon. Let me separate all the candy now, because I'll serve it at dessert, and then the kids will have a Shabbos party afterwards, and then I'll be able to put it right back out, or just leave it on the, you know, for later on. If it was a contiguous, you know, Su'udah, and they keep on, you know, grazing all throughout the afternoon, that'd probably be okay anyway. But at any rate, I can presume, or I can go about preparing in a mode of generosity and expansiveness, and not have to worry too much about the idea that there's going to be leftover, and that leftover is not really part of the Su'udah. Really was part of the Su'udah, and it would be acceptable. Yeah, now.
So is it expression or machshava? Like, is it thought or expression in terms of, like,
machshava, machshava. What do you mean expression? Meaning that I've actually stated so?
As long as it's not expressed, but then you said...
As long as it's not expressed. Mindset. If I had in mind that I'm separating now for, I'm going to prepare it for lunch, and also this way there will be plenty for Shal Shudas as well, that's problematic. Cut it short at whatever you feel like you need for this meal. Doesn't mean that 15 people around the table, 15 pieces of chicken on the plate. You know, how many, like, I don't have to Google it, like, ahead of time, what is the average number of tomatoes eaten out of the salad by every participant, and make sure that I only pull out that number of grape tomatoes from the crisper. Yeah?
What about putting away leftovers?
Putting away leftovers also, meaning in terms of what? Like, hachana?
Like, separate. Like, can you, like, let's say you have chicken on a plate, and then you have other stuff.
If it's really a mixture, no. Meaning you could put it away as is, but you couldn't separate it out. Meaning separating things out because I want to be
like
able to
deli that's on a plate.
That would be a tyrovis. Yeah. Yeah.
So you can't separate it back.
Put it all back, and if they're in two separate, you know, sections or whatever, then you're good to go. But if they're really, you know, overlapping and whatever, just put it away as is. Yeah. Put it away as is, yeah. Okay, so some other we already touched on some of these maybe, but setting the table, just to be mindful. Be mindful setting the table. Setting the table should not happen, let's say, in advance of, I'm just going to use this as an example throughout. Not like before you go to shul, if you're going to shul, but not before you go to shul. When you come back from shul, that's when the table would need to be set.
Only
if they're all mixed up. Now, how are your utensils all mixed up? There are two ways that your utensils are all mixed up. Your utensils might all be, let's say three ways. They might all be mixed up because, let's say, they were, they were washed on Erev Shabbos, and there's still a big pile of them sitting on a drying rack or on a towel on Shabbos.
In your dishwasher, they're clean.
Or in a dishwasher, so they're all just collected in that caddy, right, the silverware caddy inside of the dishwasher. So they're all collected, they're all together. It's certainly a taroves. Need to be mindful of doing so specifically, like right before we're actually about to eat, and not in the morning. I'll make sure the table's set and the table's beautiful, and then afterwards you go to shul. By the way, one other way that they might be in a taroves is as follows. I caught myself doing this at some point during the week, and it just I try to be as unhelpful as possible in my home on Shabbos itself, so I'm sure I never violated a melacha, but chas v'shalom. But I realized this, that it didn't start off as a taroves. Why? Because you open the drawer, everything's neat, the forks in the fork thing, and the knives in the knife thing, and the spoons in the spoon thing. What do you do? Okay, I need seven forks. Seven. And I need four knives. Good. And then I need, great, perfect. And everything's nice and neat, and by the time you get to the table, it's a taroves, right? So you're holding them all in your hands. By the time you actually get, you created between your kitchen and the dining room. Ah, you messed it all up and it became a taroves. So again, just to be mindful. We'll speak about peeling vegetables a little bit more when it comes to how exactly to go about doing so. But just to be mindful, sometimes I think that there's like kind of this mindset. You're not allowed to use a peeler. You can't use a peeler. Why? Because if you use a peeler, it's borer. But you can use a knife. Why can you use a knife? Because I guess that's not borer. Using a knife's not borer. So good. Using a knife's not borer. So if it's not borer, I don't have to worry about doing so immediately. It is borer. Right? Part of the tricky thing when it comes to vegetables is that it bucks the trend and bucks one of the three criteria that we have. Ordinarily, you can only separate if it is immediate use, miyad, and if it is biyad, you're doing so by hand, and also ochel mitoch psolas, only if you're removing the good from the bad. When we peel vegetables, we're very much removing the bad from the good. So that's an anomaly. The reason why that is permissible anyway is because that is still absolutely derech achila. That's the way that you eat a cucumber. You can't eat a cucumber. That's the way that a cucumber gets eaten. That is absolutely derech achila for this particular variety. But it is borer, and therefore still needs to abide by biyad and also miyad. So you need to do it really immediately before the seuda. Where can this come? It can come up again, same old, same old. Preparing in the morning before shul for after shul would be a problem when it comes to those vegetables that need to be peeled. I think this may have happened recently, although I may be imagining it. Potluck kind of situation. What can I bring? Bring a salad. Great. So bringing a salad, the stuff should be peeled then, either before Shabbos or at the person's home. So, you know, if you're feeling bold enough, bring everything else that's already in the bowl and a couple of cucumbers along the way, and either your own knife or, you know, use their knife or whatever. But really needs to be done right before the seuda. Bring toys to the park, right? Because the big kids will all enjoy the playground, but the little one might have a meltdown at some point. So just to be prepared, let me pull some toys out of the toy bin. If the toy bin is a tarovis, which it may well be, so bringing things not so that you can play with it now in the stroller en route, but as sort of like a contingency plan if we get there and you're, or going to, you know, we have, Baruch Hashem, a diverse community and different, you know, age demographics or whatever. Not everybody, necessarily has toys at home, right? So let me make sure if we're going with little kids, they don't have little kids or not. I don't know that they're going to be toys. Let me bring some toys now. Let me put some in the stroller now. Pull some, as we're going to shul, throw them under the stroller. Set in 3 hours from now, just in case, the kids will still be happy. Again, if you're pulling from a tarovess, make sure that it is being used and utilized immediately. If you want to kind of use a pretext here, so just make sure that the kids start playing with them right away. And let them play with it in the stroller en route or whatever, so that it's miyad, and then afterwards you can, you know, put it wherever you need to. Yeah?
On the peeler, so can you use a vegetable peeler if you're going to use it right away? Can you use the vegetables right away?
I will say, could you hold on to that for a little bit? And then if I don't, we'll get there. We'll get there. I think I have it written down. We'll get there. We'll get there, Mitzvah Shem. Few more. Providing tzedek laderech. So just very, very quickly. Somebody's leaving your house. You want to send them off, with some gifts, right? Especially like a kid is kvetching. You want to give him something. Didn't you eat anything? No, I was playing. I didn't think that I had to. Yeah, fine. So what can we give you just to be able to kind of, get you out of the house? So here, take a clementine, kid. You want a clementine? Here's a clementine. All right. Yeah. I need my nap. So clementine's in a bowl full of fruit. It's a tarovis. So you're pulling out of him, no problem, because he's going to eat it right now. Ooh, or is he? Right. So can you give something to somebody just basically to appease them? If you get hungry on the way home, here, take this now. That's a problem. It's at least potentially a problem. Shlomo Zalman actually had a very, very interesting psak about this. Not everybody agreed. Probably best to avoid if you at all can. But Shlomo Zalman said, when I give something to a guest who's leaving, I'm providing tzedek laderech. I'm trying to give them something to take on the road. That is its own act. I have fulfilled my intended purpose just by giving it to them. I don't care if they eat it or not. Meaning it has to be, when we say samach le'seuda, what we mean is really samach le'hishtamshus. Right? You have to perform this act close to when that item is going to be utilized. That item was utilized. Big check, but I just got a gold star on my hachnasas archim chart that I sent them off with food. That's what I set out to accomplish. That's what I did. So as soon as I gave it to them, I've already fulfilled it. I've already accomplished it. In a pinch, if they're throwing a tantrum and you really need a nap, you have what to rely upon.
Sorry. So why not? I mean, to me, that makes a lot of sense. It seems very similar to serving a meal to guests. You don't necessarily know if they're going to eat all the foods that you're serving. So why isn't that canopy reliable?
It certainly could. I mean, that's even more simple. That's even more straightforward. Meaning that I am providing this for you to eat now. I don't know exactly how much you're going to eat, so I'm giving you a fair enough quantity that I believe you probably will eat. As opposed to, we're done eating, and you have overstayed your welcome. You should have left a half hour ago. But just to grease the wheels a little bit, here, kid, take a clementine. Right? I'm not providing them with anything other than this one, this sole piece of fruit that I took out of the fruit bowl. You're either eating that or you're not. It's not like you're sitting down to you're sitting down to a meal. So what's that meal going to include? It's going to include all kinds of dishes and all kinds of food. And the question is in terms of quantities. Here, I'm giving you this fruit. Are you going to eat the fruit or not? If you're not going to eat it, or yeah, I'll see if I feel like it. If you can't commit to this piece of fruit right now, then I'm not sure that I should really do bar on your behalf. For Shlomo Zalman says that, no, this is a worthwhile act in and of itself. Meaning to say that you don't even need that svara. You don't even need that approach and that reasoning when it comes to just serving guests at your table. It's even more straightforward. I'm giving you a meal, and this is what I'm including in the meal. Pulling stuff out of the freezer can oftentimes be pulling something out of a tarovis. If you're freezer looks anything like mine. Sometimes the challahs just like hover on top. They're exactly where you need them. Sometimes they're really buried. So what about pulling out a frozen challah on Shabbos morning to thaw for a few hours? Ooh, big one. So, machlokas aposkim. Let me give you a who's who here. I think I have this. No, really, everybody's machmir. Reuel Yashiv give a psak that this is certainly not miyad, right? To leave a challah out for like 3 hours, how is that miyad? It's not. You're not eating this right away. What would be the pushback against that? What would be the pushback against
that?
You
need to have it out for that
week. It takes 3 hours. Rav Moshe Feinstein, however long it takes 3 hours. So Rav Shlomo Zalman said, I don't know that Rav Moshe ever weighed in on a frozen challah. Rav Shlomo Zalman said he's actually, there are two different psukim of his in Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa. First he was Mekil and then he retracted. So that's where he lands. He lands being Machmer. He says, you know what the difference is? He says, it's true that sometimes you need something to take a certain period of time, but only when that's the normal derech of preparing that food. How? If you need to prepare a salad, right, you're going from vegetables in the vegetable drawer to prepared salad, right? And you're going to perform borer along the way. How long does that take? And take whatever long it takes. That's how long you have to prepare that salad. If I want a salad, that's the approach. If I want a challah, I don't necessarily need to make sure that it is thawed ahead of time. That's just sort of like a lack of preparation, right? I didn't really consider it, and now I'm sort of stuck. So Shlomo Zalman says that when it is the sort of act that people typically do immediately before actually eating, then that's an appropriate preparation. Again, think of this along the lines of, it needs to be like an act of achila. How can an act of achila include a 3-hour thaw? So what he does say, as an example, is let's say I want to heat up chicken, and the chicken is in sauce, can't heat up the sauce, can only heat up the solid chicken on Shabbos day. So I want to remove the chicken from that gravy. That's ochel mitoch psoles. Now it's going to take a half hour just to warm up. Is that okay? He says, that's okay, because that's how we eat. If you're starting with cold chicken, no, you can't leave any food on any source of heat indefinitely. It burns, and if you're starting off with cold food, then the way to heat it up is that you heat it up right now, and however long it takes is how long it takes. So when it's a sort of procedure that's typically done immediately in advance of eating, and you're doing it now because it's better that way, so then it's acceptable. Otherwise, it's just considered to be, again, unless it's something that just takes a very short span of time to begin with. But once you start extending that period of time, it's only acceptable when it's the kind of thing that people typically usually do in advance of that actual achila.
Oh, okay, but you're going to put it on the platter before you leave for shul. So you're going to, but it's part of the pot that you use from Friday night that also has the gravy in it.
Right.
So you want to take it out.
So
it only needs a half an hour, 45 minutes to get warm, but I'm going to be in shul for 2 hours.
That could be a problem. That could be a problem. Yeah, that could be a problem. Make something else. Okay. yeah. Or remember, or just, like all these things, be mindful. Be mindful before Shabbos, to like retreat. I mean, it's not like, oh my gosh, and now there's nothing to eat, right? There are ways of getting around. It just means, being mindful ahead of time. Yeah.
If it's not part of a mixture, if it's like in its own.
There's nothing to talk about, then it's great. Yeah.
That's fine.
There's nothing wrong. I mean, there's no isser when it comes to heating foods in a permitted fashion earlier than you plan on eating them. That's fine. Right?
No, but you're
saying it's when there's borer involved. Borer needs to be miyad, so that's the problem. Exactly. Right. Right. Okay, let's talk a little bit about biyad, and we'll round this out. First of all, so we've spoken about this already, but as much as we say that you need to separate by hand biyad, you need to separate by hand, we know that handheld devices, it has like a whole other connotation, handheld tools, tools, silverware are acceptable. Why is sakum, why is silverware acceptable? Because effectively it's what Poskim refer to as it's a yada arichta. It's a yada arichta, it's an extension of your own hand. Meaning ordinarily, by the way, it's very interesting. I want to start an entire podcast about the history of silverware, which I found fascinating for this purpose. Specifically, meaning like we just say, oh, of course it has to, because that's how people eat. Think it is truly a yada arichta because silver is not that old. Silver is not that old in human history. It's been around for however long it's been around for, but it's like I don't know. Avraham Avinu was probably not using like a knife and fork. He was probably using a pita and everything. Everything went on the pita. So now what we've done is we've created tools to sort of extend what we would ordinarily use our hands to do. Why? It's more sanitary. You don't get as messy. We've become very, very finicky about dirt and schmutz and filth and everything. So we make a point of not using our hands. It's just really an extension of my hand. So having said that, I can't consider everything to be an extension of my hand. Basic rule of thumb is that if it's something that is really being utilized for the express purpose of separating or of sorting, then it's not really considered to be an extension of my hand. Extension of my hand is when I'm utilizing this tool for, because it's not really specialized. It's just the way that I would ordinarily go about using my hands, but I don't want to get my hands too involved and too dirty, and it just gives me maybe a little bit more of an edge. So certainly things like a colander or a strainer, straining soup on Shabbos, because, 5 bowls of soup, and there are 5 different demands as to what it should contain, and one of them is absolutely clear broth. Now, if you were the first to speak up, so good, I could have just taken it directly from the top, no problem. But you were the 5th person to say that. After everybody else has soup, then it's, I want mine clear. So that might be the reason to go for the strainer and separate out all the carrots and the parsnips and everything else. No good, not on Shabbos. No colanders, no strainers. We spoke about, let's say if you have, let's assume that it is a... I'll leave that. Right? Okay. So soup would be a good example. I wanted to bring this up. Feta strainer. You know the feta strainer? Right? And so you pop open the lid on the feta, it's sitting there in its cute little like cage. So that's a strainer. It's tucked away in a pack and play, the feta cheese. So pulling it out, it's a strainer. So shouldn't that be a problem on Shabbos? It is a problem on Shabbos. Why is anybody eating feta cheese on Shabbos? Be ashamed of yourself. You should be fleshing 25 hours straight. But let's say I don't know, it's Shavuos or whatever. It's not a Tarovus in the first place, and that's important to be mindful of. It's not a Tarovus in the first place because we spoke about this when we spoke about solids and liquids, right? That's something that is such a clear. It's not integrated whatsoever with a liquid that surrounds it. It's one big chunk. If it starts to crumble, and you're left with crumblies of feta, then pulling it out would really be problematic.
Do you want to drain the liquid off of it?
That would be soles from ochel if it's a tarovis. If it's not a tarovis, no problem.
Okay.
No problem, right? So if you go back and listen to that shiur as to, to what degree we would assume that that's a problem, but assuming it's just a block, or if you have, not the cans of Israeli pickles, but sometimes you get like the mixed the pickle mix, like the ones that you get like a like Pizza Hut or whatever, come on the table, and sometimes it'll come in like one of those plastic insert cages or that kind of thing, right? That nobody knows what I'm talking about. Okay, imagine a feta strainer for pickles. So again, you're talking about very, very large chunks don't really integrate in any which way with the liquid that surrounds them. Not a problem. What about a slotted spoon? So a slotted spoon generally should be presumed to be usser. There may be something of, Aruch HaShad, he has a very interesting piece on trying to determine if maybe a slotted spoon might be acceptable, generally presumed to be problematic. It's basically a strainer on a stick. The argument maybe is that since it's a strainer on a stick, right, so that stick, that really makes it more of a spoon than anything else, and it should just be considered, this is how you go about eating, you pull stuff out. Nevertheless, Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa does say that if you're really, and you got to do it very, very quickly, but if you find that there's like a slotted spoon in the salad or whatever, if you're really going directly, right, from the bowl to your own plate without any care to have the marinade or the dressing drip through at the bottom, meaning not to do one of these. You hold it and then One, two, three, four, five, and then onto your plate. If you're not mocked, but I'm doing one of those, bring the plate. Don't mess up anybody else's tablecloth. Pick up the plate. This is also, this is like a class in Shabbos etiquette also. So you pick up the plate, bring it close to the thing, and then you put it directly on, and you don't spill anything. But if you're not particularly concerned, you show no concern, no care whatsoever about separating the dressing from the vegetables, then it would be okay. But otherwise, if you're using it as a slotted spoon to retrieve, right, to retrieve vegetables, pickles, olives, maybe not pickles, but olives, beans that are floating in liquid, so that would be a problem. Modified water pitcher. What I'm talking about here is, you know, sometimes the water pitcher will have like a little bit of a screen at the end. Not even a screen, but like a thick kind of lip or cover that goes over the top so that the ice doesn't come out. You know what I'm talking about? Right? So, Chazon Ish spoke about the following case. A tea kettle, I don't know if these still exist, a tea kettle that has the strainer right in the spout. So they're probably making a comeback. Tea is like very in now. So, strainer right in the spout. Chazon Ish said that was mutter. And the crowd goes wild. everybody, how could that possibly be acceptable? Again, very, very interesting approach here in Archel Shabbos, which is basically as follows. That maybe if you have something that primarily is Kli A, it's a teapot, it's a tea kettle, that's what it is. It's made to hold tea and to pour tea out of. And there happens to be something that's included therein that gives you a leg up on holding back whatever you don't really want to come out. So that's really more incidental, and it's not really an act of straining. It's really an act of just pouring everything out of this tea kettle, and the tea kettle is serving its purpose, and it happens to be modified in some capacity, and that helps to actually hold back the tea leaves. If that's the case, this would be like an exact carbon copy. Many disagree with the Chazon Ish. This, by the way, I think marks the first time in the Hilchos Shabbos year that we've mentioned a Chazon Ish Lakula. Chazon Ish is Mekel all the time. He's Makben on Shiurim, he's Machmer on Shiurim, he's not Machmer across the board, but he was Mekel, and really much to the consternation of some other poskim. Again, if you can avoid it, then great, and if you can't, you have the Chazon Ish to rely upon. What about a similar sort of thing? Straining, trying to pour broth out of a pot, and you know, clamping down the lid, right, to just be able to pour off the broth. So again, it's ochel mitoch psola. So the question is, are you using a kli? Well, I'm using a kli, but is that really a kli? Like, what is that? It's not a straining utensil. It's not a colander. It's not a sieve. It's not a. Yeah, I mean, well, even if it's a shinui, it might still be usser, right? The question is this really considered to be like just my own hand, an extension of my hand, like using silverware, or is this using an actual kli in order to separate? So Rav Shlomo Zalman, also quoted in Shmir Shabbos Kochos, I think it's where I saw it, says that this is acceptable. He believed that this really is like yada arechta. Why? Because it's the kind of thing that really I could easily enough do by hand.
I was going to say, I think it's the type of thing you can't do with your hand.
Sure, you can. Sure. I do it all the time when nobody's home. And then I put the pot right back in the fridge. you just tip it, and I would just leave my hand right there, and my hand is no different from the actual pot lid. Why would I not use my hand? Because it's disgusting. So much the same way that I eat with a fork and a spoon, as opposed to just, you know, pulling broth up out of my bowl, because it's disgusting. So using a kli just because it's otherwise gross and you're going to get dirty is really exactly what yada arichta is. That's what Shlomo Zalman says. When do we not consider something to be yada arichta? The reason why I'm using a colander is because it's performing a function that's very, very difficult to do with your hand. Creating those kinds of perforations so perfectly with my own hands is very, very difficult. That's why I employ the kli as opposed to just, you know, clamping down the lid on top of the pot. So peeling vegetables. Let's come back to you. We got two more, and we'll do this quickly. So peeling vegetables. If you have received a psak that it is acceptable to use a vegetable peeler on Shabbos, then kol hakavod, and that's wonderful, and you should keep on doing that. If you have not yet received such a psak, you should ask that person who has, were they asked, and you should ask that person. But if you ask me, I've never seen in print. I've never seen in print that any Sefer in Hilchos Shabbos has said that using a peeler is acceptable, is mutter. Why? Because you can't really say that it's just an extension of my hand. It's a specialized, I don't bring this to the table. It's not something that I usually use. It is fulfilling a very, very specific purpose. It's we do use it in a different capacity from a knife, a regular knife. So that seems to be the typical consensus. I have heard, although I've never seen it in writing, I have heard that... Back when?
Whenever it was
written. I mean, writing. I don't know, writing, whatever. I don't know, as far back as, you know, Rav Moshe's earliest, that she was, you know, whenever. I don't know, how long have Pillars been around? The 60s? Right, during, like, the gadget, kitchen gadget craze of the 60s, even earlier, maybe. Probably earlier. 20s, 20s, you know, like, everyone was, yeah. Yeah? Who? Anyone know? No? Are we Googling? We'll get back to you. We'll try to put it in the show notes here. Okay, meanwhile, so... Peeling with a peeler. That's basically the rub when it comes to peeling with a peeler. So the rumor originally from Rav Moshe is that he held that it was mutter, meaning inasmuch as peeling the, if basically like this, if I can, why am I allowed to peel cucumber on Shabbos? I'm taking psolas from ochel. Why? Because it's derech achila. So if it's derech achila, how can it be claimed that the tool that is most sensible to use for to get to the ochel, how could that really be considered an item or an object that couldn't be utilized? Something along those lines. You're basically that it's like it's a knife. It's a knife that's just kind of, you know, fancy. It's a fancy knife. It's a fancy schmancy knife. I've never seen it in print. Unless you've like received a psak and this is, you know, an ancient family tradition or whatever, and you know that there are, you know, teeth to it, I would really avoid it. Yeah.
Is it different between Shabbos and Yom Tov for the peeler?
Is there a difference? Maybe. I got to think through that. Maybe. Maybe maybe different. Maybe different.
But is it different between like during the rest of the year and during Pesach when people peel all sorts of vegetables that they don't always necessarily peel, and so even if it is on a Shabbos, you could still use a peeler? I went to someone's house for Pesach, Shabbos Seder, and they peeled the cucumbers with a peeler.
Yeah.
So we use a peeler on Shabbos.
I mean, when you say you went to somebody's house, you mean you went to somebody, like somebody who's a somebody or somebody like a...
I went to a Chabad rabbi's house, and they used
the peeler. So I don't know. So ask us, so maybe, I don't know.
You said Rav Moshe holds that it's mutter?
I have heard that Rav Moshe holds that it's mutter.
Wouldn't that be written somewhere? If
you'd sure like it to be. Yeah. I'll tell you why. Because poskim are real people. Because poskim are real human beings who operate in this world and have real, and what we have is a collection of the tshuvas that Rav Moshe actually responded to real questions, you know, about, and there could simply be questions that, you know, either never really went asked or were never written. You know, were never asked in that manner, in that function.
There isn't anything written from Rav Moshe either way. It's not like he wrote someone asked.
Not to my knowledge. I can't tell you for sure, but not to my knowledge. Yeah. But again, if this is a psak that you've already received, and not, look, there are two components here. One, a psak that you've already received, and a psak that you've received because this is a psak that you sought and received. Then by all means, there's certainly seems like there would be grounds to be able to do so. One final issue, tea bags. Without getting into the whole issue of can you make tea on Shabbos, how to make tea on Shabbos, let's just talk about drinking tea on Shabbos. Let it be presumed that you're using tea bags and that you're using the tea bag in the correct manner, in the right kli, and all of that. Here is the issue that you run into when it comes to a tea bag. We spoke about this briefly when we had a conversation about using a French press on Shabbos. The top, you know, 9/10 of the teacup, golden, perfect, no problem, no taroves, nothing to worry about. When you get down to the very, very bottom of the teacup, where the tea bag is not residing, but lurking, where that tea bag is lurking, those final couple tablespoons of tea are effectively mixed together with the liquid that's actually inside of the tea bag, along with the tea leaves, in theory. But what basically happens is when you tip your cup over and you drain those final few tablespoons out of the teacup, you're drawing not only the liquid that surrounded the tea bag, but you're actually drawing the liquid out of the tea bag itself by the force of gravity. That tea is coming out of the mixture together with the contents of the tea bag, the tea leaves inside of the tea bag. How's it coming out? What's holding the tea leaves back and what's bringing the tea forward is the tea bag itself. That tea bag's a kli. The tea bag's a kli. It's a filter. It's a paper filter. So you want to be careful. Being careful is pretty easy. It just means a matter of being mindful. Before you start your tea, just grab the tea bag along with some tea around it so you're not like squeezing and not dripping, whatever. Plop it down on your saucer and you are good to go. Thanks very much, everybody. Try to find out about, I'll see if I can get this in writing for anybody who's interested about the peeler. And what else did we have to look up? There's one other fact check that we needed. Yep. When were peelers invented?
1800s.
Unbelievable. So yes, old body of halachic literature from the achronim who have lived since the time of the 1800s. We should have waited on vegetable peelers.